Welcome to the 54 Problems Podcast, the global mini golf podcast. Hear from some of the best players in the sport. Look ahead to some of the biggest tournaments and have a chance to win some amazing prizes. And now your hosts, Andrew Edmonds and Simon Brown.
Hello and welcome to the 54 Problems Podcast. I'm your co-host, Andrew Edmonds. Welcome one and all, and thank you so much for joining us. And with me, as always, it's my good friend and co-host. You're never going to believe it. It's Simon Brown. Hello, Simon.
Hello. Hello. Good to be back.
Yeah, how are you? Okay?
Oh, good. Yeah, been looking forward to this episode. Big name guest, as we like to have. Those of you that listen would have seen he joined us for the last episode. This time, it's all about him. So I've been looking forward to doing this for the past couple of weeks, and great to do it. So look forward to this.
Just before we bring him out, we've just got time for my favourite part of the episode, which is where we thank our Patreon champions for their support. So thank you very much, Sevi Kukielka, for your support in helping us run this podcast. And if our listeners would like to support the podcast, get access to behind-the-scenes gossip, get access to the episodes as soon as they're recorded, you can do that by going to patreon.com/54problems, and we'll put that link into the episode description on Facebook. Okay, so joining us today, we're very thankful we didn't scare him off a couple of weeks ago and he has decided to come back. It is the Putter King and the 2017 Australian Mini Golf Champion. Please welcome back to the podcast, it's Alan Cox. Hello, Alan.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me on board.
Well, thank you for coming back. We're glad we didn't scare you off too much. You decided to come back.
No, love talking mini golf. Love spreading the word, and looking forward to it.
Yeah, and as Simon said, this episode is all about you, and we've got a lot to talk about. I hope you don't mind me saying you've been playing mini golf for a long time, so we'll get into your history a little bit, some of the notable things that you've done in your time playing mini golf, and then we'll get into the famous getting to know you questions.
Yeah, looking back, I can see you've been playing for 35 years, is that correct?
Yes, 35 years. Started as a novice way back in 1987, was my first novice tournament, and competed in a public tournament at Bankstown, which is like 20 minutes from home here. And just fell in love with it then. So from shooting average scores of like 45 or something to personal bests of like 22 or something these days. So it's been quite a journey.
Yeah, I think for those of us, mostly I've only been playing the game a few years, it's fascinating when we speak to people that have played for decades. I've done a little digging about the internet, as I tend to do when we have a guest on, and it said you won your first amateur medal at Mermaid Beach in 1988 before taking your first professional medal at the same place at Mermaid Beach again in 2004. Wow. It just seems a hugely long journey between the 80s, 90s, noughties, and now here we are in 2022.
Yes, it's been a whole heap of fun. Starting off in the novice ranks, progressing from novice, then competing at different other courses, and then progressing through the amateur and then professional ranks, and then eventually in international tournaments. So it's been a steady progression, I guess, and loved every minute of it. So the competition's been great, camaraderie has been sensational on our tours, and we just have a lot of fun. used to be a course when I was just a youngster. We're talking, oh, geez, I would have been 10, 12, something like that, just playing with my brothers. And we were always pretty competitive. Didn't matter what we were playing, we were always just very competitive. And my parents used to just take us to the putt-putt course, you know, once or twice a year or something. And I don't know what it was, but I just sort of picked up that, especially playing putt-putt, there was a lot of tricky type holes, and twos were good scores. And even though my brothers were probably much more skilled at the game than I was, I sort of very quickly learned that twos were a good score. And I've sort of developed that, and I probably play fairly conservative game over the years. It might have lost me a few tournaments, but it might have won me more than what it's, you know, what I've lost. So just playing with my brothers, and when I moved to Sydney, there was a course 15 minutes away, and me and my wife used to go and play, and the course owner was a putt-putt professional, and took a bit of interest in my scores, as we'll go in there sort of, you know, once a month, or it might have even turned out about weekly or something. So and he took an interest in my scores and let me know that there was competition and that they played for prize money, and I've gone, oh, okay, that sounds interesting, and just started practicing and playing. So and sort of developed from there.
So just looking domestically from now, starting in the late 80s and going through the 90s, the noughties, how have you seen the sport evolve in Australia? Were you starting to notice a shift at some point to more adventure golf style courses? What was the evolution like, and how did that journey look for you as you started to get more and more interested in the sport, better and better with the sport?
Yeah, I guess for me, starting in the sort of late 80s, I was well aware of the history through the sort of mid 70s with Australian players actually playing in the US championships and things like that. So when I first started playing, that history of Australians playing overseas or whatever was highlighted, and that was good to know that, you know, Australians can be competitive on the world stage, with Manuel Serrano being a bit of a hero of the Australian ones, making the finals of the World Championships at the putt-putt in the mid-70s. So
when you first started playing putt-putt, you were looking at some of your Australian heroes, and one thing you saw was how they were able to transition across into playing the States, and you actually followed in your hero's footsteps and did that yourself. Can you talk about when the first time was you played internationally and what that experience was like?
Oh yes, played in 1997 in Orange Lake in Florida, and I got to play with the likes of Brad Lebo, Randy Reeves, some of the best US players, and that was quite the experience, having won the Australian match play tournament before going there, and to play with those guys, you just realize that the level difference, I guess, of the competition, I guess a bit like comparing our local national basketball league, like comparing that to the NBA. It was right. That sort of jump.
Really?
Yeah, it really was. And And it was really quite the experience. And fortunately, you know, some of the guys took me under their wings, and Brad Lebo, a good friend of mine, took me under his wing and showed me around. And I was there for a week of three tournaments, and it had some decent scores, but yeah, my average scores were quite average, unfortunately. But but the experience of playing in that company was it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, okay, so it sounds like it was quite an eye-opening experience then. You just come off the back of a domestic match play win, you're feeling good, and then you get to Florida. And is it a shock when you're seeing the quality of these players like Randy on the field?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it was, yeah, an Australian all the way over, first time overseas trip, basically. And yeah, just the consistency, the high level and the consistency. I know I was capable of the scores they were shooting, but they were just machines. Yeah, they just keep shooting those sort of scores, and you just can't have average rounds. And you sort of learn that. That's one thing I learned from that. I realized that, okay, yes, I can shoot the scores that they can shoot, but they're just so consistent, and they just keep shooting those sort of scores. So it was quite the eye opener. Yes.
I think one thing that always shows you the true competitors in mini golf is when you find that next level up, it puts some people off, but other people, it excites them. They don't take disappointment from finding the next level. They take sort of anticipation and excitement that they could get to that level. And you speak about it with that enthusiasm that excited you to see that consistency, to see there was something to get towards.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And then once, and that just that experience of playing at that level, when I come back home, my game just it did reach another level. Mm. I probably get more consistent and probably notched up. At that stage, I hadn't won a national stroke play event, and I'd been close, knocking on the door, and not long after that, I sort of finally got over the line, and I probably attribute that to the international experience. So,
yeah, okay, and you also made friends on that trip that have lasted a lifetime, right? That you stay in touch with all the way to today.
Oh, yes. And like I said, when I played in the Masters a few years ago, it was great catching up with those guys after 20 odd years. So so we could go back to America and knowing those guys and spending time with them and going over the memories of the time in Orange Lake in Florida there. So the Masters was 2 weeks of a lot of fun catching up with some guys over there and having to prove something to myself. So the Masters was it was obviously great to catch up with everyone, but I sort of had a bit of a goal in mind as well. So having not performed all that well back in 97, it was time to go, well, okay, we've been around long enough, and it's time to sort of at least perform at a reasonable level.
Yeah, and as Simon said, so you've been to America now, you've seen the standard. You haven't been disappointed. In fact, it's motivated you. You're excited by the standard. You bring that back home with you. It's sounding like now you're becoming really hooked by the sport and getting better and better. Can you talk about how the Putter King started and what that's about?
Yes. It was an international scavenger hunt type competition, okay, with a list of like 17 type tasks that we had to complete, all the finding mini golf obstacles. There was some maths things involved, and there was this, apparently there was this trick shot thing that that was a part of the competition as well. So I stumbled upon that on the Putting Penguin page, and I thought, man, that looks really interesting. So it was over the space of a couple of months, and there was like 17 tasks. And for a mini golf nut like me, it was like, yeah, I'm gonna have a try at this. So completed, I think about 15 or something of the 17 steps, and the trick shot thing was like, wow, okay, what am I going to come up with here? But yeah. during our putting competitions all around Australia, some of the guys would just line up on a hole, and it might be, okay, first one, you know, we'd all put in a couple of bucks each or something, and first one to make it from here to here and jump over the watts, you know, jump over whatever, and we were sort of doing that sort of stuff, and I'm thinking, okay, well, I can come up with something. So luckily, unfortunately for myself, I completed most of the tasks and end up winning the competition against your own UK player Richard Godfrey. So me and him actually tied for first going back 10-11 years ago, and it come down to a vote of our trick shots, and unfortunately I come up with something that was pretty crazy, and I would have been very disappointed if that had lost, because that shot is probably like a one in a million type occurrence. So I was very fortunate that that sort of occurred, and end up winning the Putter King competition. So it all sort of started from there. So
we'll put that in the show notes then on the Facebook page, so people can watch that, your first trick shot. So from that scavenger hunt 11 years ago, with the one item on the list being the first trick shot, that inspired the start of the Putter King. Now, 11 years later, can you say where you are with it? How many trick shots do we have?
Yes, the total now is 403. YouTube channel has amassed something like 8.5 million views, and we've raised, for the monetization of videos, we've raised something around about $16,000 for the charities that I support. So very, very proud of that.
I do think that is such an amazing thing to do, to monetize content in that way. I'm a fan of your YouTube channel. I see your top viewed video has 4.1 million views. Just insane numbers, and the fact you've put that to good use. I'd be delighted if you would take a couple of minutes to talk about the charities you support. I believe, correct me if I'm incorrect, Bear Cottage and Westmead Children's Hospital are among them. Do you want to talk about the charities and why they matter to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very, very dear to my heart. Goes back, actually, it does go back to the King scavenger hunt. My nephew, who was under cancer treatment at the time, he was only 8 years old. And at the time, his iPad, which he had, which was his life. And one of the tasks was to perform a hole in one on this certain hole. And obviously, yeah, he had the Putter King app on his iPad, and he let me borrow that for a couple of days while he's doing treatment, so I could do it. So due to that task and completing it, I end up tying with Richard. So if it wasn't for my 8-year-old nephew, I would have never have won that competition. So unfortunately, he passed away from that cancer several years ago. So as part of a way of repaying his very kind and generous gesture, I've actually monetized the YouTube channel, and we support the charity Bear Cottage, which is a children's respite and end of life care center, only one of two in Australia. And my nephew spent his last couple of months there, and the work they do is amazing. And the other fundraising was through the children's hospital, the oncology. So I did a 24-hour fundraising marathon for them, and we end up raising just over $9,000. So all I did was play putt-putt golf for 24 hours. So I had a lot of fun, and we raised some money for some great causes. So and just made, I think it was 1516 hole in one. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so looking at your day job, I believe, are you an industrial chemist?
Yes. I did a chemistry certificate way back, late 70s. Yes. And then, through quality control jobs, and end up in as a research and development chemist. Again, a whole sort of progression through different roles, but ended up as a research and development chemist, yeah.
I'm always interested in what mini golfers do as a day job, because I think what we do as a hobby is so fun and so frivolous. Mm. And then most of us go to our day-to-day lives and do these incredibly grown-up, respectable sounding things. And I mean, yet again, here you are, you know, you're the putter king, you have your YouTube channel, you're known for your fun and your trick shots, and you know, day to day that doesn't sound like that. And I guess we're all the same. Mm. As it often comes back to, I think, when we speak in the podcast to different guests, it is that sense of community that makes people come back. And it's funny because we talk about it in the UK, in Sweden, in the US. Then we talk about it in part 18. Now we talk about it in Australia. This sense of belonging and community is such a big part of the game, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Especially in Australia, we have huge distances to travel with different states and different competitions. So, yeah, if you're not friends, and the amount of time we spend with each other, it could get pretty ugly. So we're pretty fortunate in that regard that there's not too many competitions or whatever that get sorted out in the car park, so to speak. So we're a fairly friendly bunch.
Okay, Alan, are you ready for some quick fire questions?
I'm ready.
Excellent. Then this is Getting to Know You.
Getting to Know You.
Alan, do you have a mini golf nickname? And if so, where did it come from?
Well, probably the Putter King, and from winning that competition. So yeah, that's it.
And do you have a greatest achievement? It doesn't have to be sort of the highest profile tournament that you've won, or your lowest score, or your course record. Just whatever, when you look back over your career, what makes you the most proud?
Yeah, While the actual tournament record is I'm pretty happy with that. I guess what gives me more joy is the amount of charity work I've been able to do based on that record. So I would say that gives me more. I'm more proud of the actual charity work than the tournament results. So,
okay, so say now on the Australian tour, you have a new player. They've already been given the advice to enjoy the game and enjoy themselves. What other advice would you give to this new player?
Just enjoy the game. Mm-hmm. Enjoy the game. Learn the what it takes to prepare for tournaments, and don't be too hard on yourself regarding results early on. I mean, mm-hmm. it does take a while to get competitive. So I know when I first started playing as a novice and an amateur, the progression to the pro ranks took me quite a while. So yeah, just have a bit of fun and be patient.
Okay, now speaking to someone that has played internationally, do you have a favorite course?
Yeah, I've got to say I'm a big fan of the Aloha course, which is one of the courses, a part of the Masters. It's a MOS adventure style course, but there are plenty of aces on offer on that course, and it's a lot of fun to play.
If you could time travel to one place, you can choose one place, you can go backwards in time or forwards in time, and wherever you go, you always get to return home afterwards, so you don't have to worry about the return trip. But you can only go one place in time. Where would you time travel to?
I would like to be 1976 watching Manuel Serrano play the world championship match. That would be exciting. Yeah, so it was 1976, that final against Dick Florin. I would love to be in the crowd cheering the Aussie on. That would be exciting.
Right, because he was your hero, right? And it sounds like he sort of inspired you to take your journey.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, and what is your mini golf hottest take? So say you've got a room with a bunch of Australian mini golf players, old friends from the US maybe, established mini golf players. What do you think is the one opinion you have about mini golf you could say that would cause the biggest discussion in the room? So what's your mini golf hottest take?
Oh, okay. I guess coming from the putt-putt background.
Yeah.
And playing under the World Mini Golf Federation rules with the different balls. Mm-hmm. Geez, if you wanted to stir things up, yeah, you would let putt-putt players play with World Mini Golf Federation European type balls. That would be like almost sacrilege.
So, okay, I like that. So that's your hottest take then. Let putt-putt players play with mini golf balls and see what happens.
Yeah, that would be just crazy. I'd probably get hung.
I'd love to do this now. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah. We got to do a bit of that. There's a putt-putt course. Actually, the one where I won up in Mermaid Beach, and we got to play under World Mini Golf Federation rules, a tournament up there. So we got to play with different type of golf balls and some European balls. And yeah, that was a lot of fun. So
yeah, I'd imagine the tight lines and the flat, consistent ball toss to each hole would actually lend itself so well to our mini golf balls. But yes. I wouldn't want to go and tell the putt-putt players that. But we know it.
No. and you know, I guess you see Team USA when they go to play Wagam events and whatever, that the USA guys have to come to grips with the World Mini Golf Federation type ball. So it is quite a learning experience.
Yeah, it always amazes me how well they adjust and cope. Something we've mentioned before on the podcast, but it shows how good they are. Because for me, it took me at least 12 months to master the basics. And they master it in a few days when they go out to events. So all credit to them.
Oh, absolutely. They're, that's why you don't see too many. I don't think I've ever seen any European type putters go over there and win putt-putt tournaments. They are experts on their home course. So while you might see some of the Europeans win at the Masters and US Opens and events like that, you don't see them winning putt-putt tournaments. They are experts at that game.
Okay, and now's a part of the episode where we shine a spotlight onto one of your balls. Alan, can you pick a ball for us that's particularly memorable to you for whatever reason?
Yeah, I'd have to go, and I've got to admit that I do have some association with this company. It's probably my Chromax ball that I played with at the Masters. So it's a... apart from being a Chromax fan for the last 10 or 15 years, I got to play with a Chromax ball during the Masters and played pretty well. And obviously, you know, one of my big career highlights was actually, you know, finishing in the money and competing well there. So, definitely my silver Masters Chromax ball.
And finally, what is the one thing that you think most mini golf players getting wrong? Could be something that you do wrong yourself that you want to correct, or it could be something that you notice in other people that you've changed.
It's probably not so much a technical thing, but I just see sometimes players not react to the current situation that the of gameplay. Okay. So they might end up being just too aggressive at a certain stage where they don't need to be. And I just go, why would you do that? Yeah. So if I had to mention something, it would be that.
Well, I feel personally attacked, so thank you.
I play a fairly conservative sort of game, and there's just times where I see players just attack something and they might be leading by two or three and think, why would you even think about doing that when, you know, or you might go into the last round of a tournament where you're like five in front and they still attack, that attack troublesome holes where you could just lay up, take a two and move on. I've seen that quite often over the years where players just don't react to the situation.
Alan, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for coming back to the podcast. I know you a lot more now, and you've given us some interesting things to think about. Have you enjoyed your time on the 54 Problems podcast?
It's been a lot of fun, and anytime I get to talk and spread the word about mini golf is always a good time, and I think you'll have a lot of fun with all the editing. So good luck with that.
Thank you. Is there anything else you'd like to say? Anything you'd like to point our global audience to? Anything you'd like to make people aware of? Anything you're hoping to discuss that we haven't done yet? Any final things that you'd like to say?
It's just to enjoy the game of mini golf. Like the competitive side, it is, for me, it is a whole heap of fun, but just get out with the family and just enjoy the game. I mean, that's what it's all about. So, I see it all the time in practice, and it's just a great leisurely activity just to get out and enjoy the game. So.
Yeah, okay, Simon, any final words from you?
Yeah, I'll just have a throwback to two episodes ago. We'd done a Greater Putt 18 on it, and he name-checked you, Alan, and he called you a legend of the game. Haven't spoke to you for two episodes that we've just done now with you. I am delighted that I can now agree with him that you are indeed a legend of the game. And thank you so much for coming on, sharing your 35-plus years of experience with us. I hope you've enjoyed it, and we've certainly enjoyed having you. Thanks.
Yeah, enjoyed it. I've had a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun playing the Putt 18, Matt, with Glenn, and I've really enjoyed all the series and the competition with Glenn and the Putt 18, Matt. And yeah, thanks so much for having me on. I've really enjoyed it. So, have fun with the editing.
Okay, then. The only thing left to say is goodbye from Alan.
Goodbye from me.
Goodbye from Simon.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.